When Kate contacted me some time ago and asked me to lead this service this morning, it's a sort of series, isn't it, that you've been doing on Genesis that you started a few weeks ago. And I said I'm quite happy to continue in that series. And the theme this morning really is from Genesis 4 and chapter 1, New Beginnings on the Other Side of Paradise. For those of you who were here last week, I think you had Reverend Paul Hills, didn't you, last week, to lead the service. And our reading this morning carries on from last week when Adam and Eve were sent out of the garden, dismissed, so to speak, never to return. And this is where the bit comes in about new beginnings on the other side of paradise. Garden of Eden's paradise. God sends them out, discharges them, and they're on the other side of paradise. So that's the theme for this morning. And I'll just read the verses. I don't know whether do they come on the overhead? No? Yeah? In Genesis chapter 4. Adam lay with his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. She said, "With the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man." Later she gave birth to his brother Abel. Now Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. But Abel brought fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. I think I'd be pretty angry too, wouldn't you? But that'd be my sort of first human natural response, if you like. So Adam and Eve are no longer living in paradise. However you interpret this story, and I sometimes find the Old Testament, some of the stories are quite difficult to interpret and get your head round. Some people interpret them literally. Some people put their own sort of interpretation on things. But however you look at this story, however you interpret it, it is certainly about human beings deciding to do things their way. Instead of trusting God, I suppose. They think they know better than God. They don't want to obey God. I'll do my own thing. Apparently, one of the most popular songs at funerals is the song "I Did It My Way" by Frank Sinatra. Remember that one? I'm old enough to remember it. Sad though, isn't it, sometimes, that people can live life their way and forget about God. Leave God out of the thinking. My twin brother died in March this year. Three months ago. Same age as me, would you believe? And I felt quite sad. Not just because he'd passed away and I'm the same age as him and thinking, when's my turn coming? But because at his funeral, you know, they had status quo and rocking all over the world. And things like that, which my brother was into. He loved the old headbanging stuff and rock music. And some people like that, and that's fine. Everybody to their own. I like a sort of quieter, maybe more classical type when I do listen to any music. But it's sad if they're enjoying those things that God has given to them. God has given us ears to hear. God has given us eyes to see. God has given us, you know, music to enjoy. It's so sad, though, that they don't even know God, who's given them everything. They're celebrating and rocking all over the world, but does that mean a lot? And when it comes to the crunch, this life's pretty short anyway. The next one's the long life. The next one's the eternal life. That's the one we need to be looking towards and thinking about. Anyway, life was very different for Adam and Eve. They had to work hard to survive. They worked hard as a family. The Cain and Abel, they're all sort of working away in the fields, and it's almost like an arable farmer and a livestock farmer, isn't it? These verses are a bit difficult because they don't give a lot of detail about the quality or the quantity or the personalities of Cain and Abel. How did they tick? Cain was the firstborn. We can only suggest differences between these two. We're told that Abel kept flocks and Cain worked the soil. And it's a sort of sensible way of sharing out the workload, isn't it? They're both doing their part. They're both important. They're working together. They both have skills that God has given them. And they both do things to the best of their ability. Both of these vocations are good. You can't say that Cain's job is better than Abel, or Abel's is better than Cain. They sort of complement each other, really. The Bible doesn't say whether sacrifices had been commanded by God or whether the practice just started up spontaneously as an expression of our thanksgiving and worship. But verse 3 and 4, it says in there, in the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. But Abel brought fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favour on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favour. So why did Cain's offering sort of annoy God? Why did it make God angry? Why was God angry with Abel? With Cain, sorry. Get these things mixed up, don't I? Why was he angry? Just because he dug the soil? He wasn't angry with his brother, was he? He accepted him. As we look back at the story, we can see that the shedding of blood in sacrifice can be actually seen as a forerunner of Jesus' sacrifice that we've been celebrating this morning. A good sacrifice, a blood sacrifice, losing one's life. And in retrospect, today we can see that. However, there doesn't appear to be anything wrong with Cain offering fruit as opposed to animal sacrifice. Later in Israel's history, we can read about sacrifices being grain offerings, harvest offerings, all legitimate expressions of worship that God accepts. And he not only accepts, he actually commands. So why does God reject Cain and his offering? Why do you think? The New Testament refers to Cain and Abel. And in Hebrews, there are a couple of verses there. I'll just read those to you. In Hebrews 11, it says, "By faith Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith he was commended as a righteous man when God spoke well of his offerings." Interesting, isn't it? Abel was righteous. Was he any better? Abel's heart was right with God, and Cain's wasn't. God looked favourably on Abel because he had faith, while we're told there Cain did not. And if we look at some words of Jesus in 1 John, in chapter 3, it says this. Jesus was talking to his disciples in chapter 3, verse 11. It says, "This is the message you heard from the beginning. We should love one another. Do not be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one and murdered his brother." And that will come into next week when Kate's preaching here next week. The dastardly deed, if you like. And why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil and his brother's were righteous. It's interesting, isn't it? It seems clear that Abel was in a good relationship with God and Cain was separated from him. And a very important principle in all of this is this, that God always looks at the giver and the worshipper before he looks at the gift. It's an important principle. It doesn't matter what we give, it doesn't matter what our worship's like, even here this morning. It doesn't matter how we serve, whether in the church or the community or whatever. God is looking at the individual. He's looking inside. We're talking about looking inside. Not, you know, the outside doesn't always portray what's truly inside. It can be deceiving. God looks on the inside. He looks at the giver. And that's the important thing. This means that it's so important that we're in a relationship with God before we seek to worship him, before we seek to serve him. You can't do that. You can't worship properly until you're in a relationship with him. That's what it's all about. Hard, isn't it? Hard words. Being in a relationship with God is so important to make our worship real. And of course there are many people around who are not in a relationship with God. There's a great many people who do a lot of good work in the community, and this is a good thing. It's good to be good. It's nice to be good. It's a human thing to do good things. And it can make us satisfied to a certain extent. But if it's not believing in God, if it's not done with the right motives, it's not a lot of good. It won't gain God's favour. An empty religious act doesn't do anything for God. And sometimes people can have bad motives for doing good things. There's a story that I read about a man in New York. And he was riding in a New York taxi cab. And he noticed that the cab driver had slowed down and swerved to avoid a pedestrian in the road. And so he was sitting in the back of the taxi and he said to the driver, he's trying to compliment the driver, really. He said, I see you swerved and slowed down to avoid hitting that pedestrian. And the driver responded, yeah, but if you hit them, you've got to fill out a report. Motives? Bad motives for doing good things? Motives matter to God. God's not impressed with those people who do the right things for the wrong reasons. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus looked at the Pharisees and he quotes Isaiah when he says this, and he says, these people honour me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. He's not just saying, I love God, I come to church every Sunday, I do this, that, and the other, I'm a great person. But your heart's far away from God. God's not fooled. I used to think I could fool him. I used to think I could be a person like that. That I could go around looking okay. And I knew I wasn't. Inside. Their hearts are far from me. What are our motives for serving God? Perhaps we need to do a sort of motive checkup once in a while on our lives and on ourselves. Why do I try to be nice to other people? Why do I put money in the offering? Why do I come to church every week? Why am I here this morning? But back to Cain and Abel. There's an interesting clue in the Genesis account that tells us about Cain and Abel and their offerings. In verse 4, we read that Abel offers some of the firstborn of his flock and the fat portions of his offering. And the word that's translated fat portions means the choicest, the best part, or abundance. And Cain was giving that to God, the very, very best that he had. It makes me question myself sometimes. Do I give the best to God? Not always. Not always. Abel gave to God what cost him most. On the other hand, Cain merely offers some of the fruit of the soil. Not the first fruit we read in there. Not the good stuff. Abel brought the best part of his flocks. The choicest part. But Cain wasn't so particular. It's like almost, well, anything will do. Second best. God doesn't want second best. He really doesn't. Abel went out of his way to worship God by giving of his best. And perhaps Cain merely discharged a duty. And as well as motives that we've mentioned, one of the key themes through Scripture is that God seeks worship that is perfect and costly. He will not be satisfied with second best. I'm sorry. He just won't. Not from you, not from me. We will never satisfy God with second best. When the prophet Malachi in the Old Testament speaks God's words to the priest of his time, he was accusing them of sort of showing contempt for God's name. And the priest asked this, "Have we shown contempt for God's name?" And this was their reply. "When you bring blind animals for sacrifice, isn't that wrong? When you sacrifice crippled or diseased animals, is that not wrong? Cursed is the cheat who has an acceptable male sacrifice in his flock," in other words, something really good and the best, "and vows to give it, and then sacrifices a blemished animal to the Lord." Do we always give of our best to God? And I don't just mean money. I mean the best of all of our life. Do we always give of our best? I read another story. Sounds as if I read a lot. I don't actually read an awful lot. I'm a poor reader. I'm a slow reader. Margaret will read through a book in an evening. You know, she'll go through 300 pages. I'm not a fast reader, and probably that's why I don't read a lot. But in America at Thanksgiving, the Butterball Company set up a hotline to answer questions about cooking turkeys. One woman asked if she could use a turkey that had been in the bottom of a freezer for 23 years. So, some of you will know Alec and Gwen, who've passed on now. Well, you know, I cleared Alec's house and at one point it must be getting on a year now, isn't it? It's getting on. And Alec, bless him, had things in the bottom of his freezer that were 8, 9, 10 years out of date. And I had to bin them, throw them out. Here's a woman who's talking about, in the bottom of my freezer, I've got a turkey that's been there 23 years. And the Butterball expert says to her, it would probably be safe if the freezer has been below zero for the entire 23 years. Probably. But the expert warned her that even if the turkey was safe to eat after 23 years, the flavour would probably have, you know, deteriorated a wee bit. And it wouldn't be worth eating, maybe. And the woman said, "That's what I thought. We'll give the turkey to our church." It's an amusing story, but you see what I'm trying to say about giving of our best. God's displeasure at his sacrifice caused Cain's inward nature to be revealed. The resentment in Cain's face was directed both to God and to Abel. He was mad, he was annoyed, he was angry. Whatever the cause of God's rejection of Cain's offering, verse 5 focuses our attention on his response. It says he became angry with God. Rather than being concerned about remedying the situation and pleasing God, he became very, very angry. Perhaps we should just move away from the Bible passage for a moment and ask this question of ourselves. How do we respond when God says no? When God convicts us of wrong in our lives, how do we respond? Do we seek to make things right? Do we come before him in humble worship, in confession? Or do we follow Cain's way and get really angry or even dismissive of God? I don't know. Maybe he was angry that his younger brother was getting a better deal than he was. Maybe there's a bit of jealousy there. And the jealousy became hatred. And as we'll see next week, the hatred turns into murder. He's killing his brother. Such is what's eating him up inside. But Kate will say more of that next week. The title next week will be Murder Most Foul. You've got to come and hear that, haven't you? Sounds exciting. Sounds a bit gruesome. But that's the follow-on next week. I do encourage you to come and listen to Kate and what she has to say about that. I'm sure it'll be good. I've always thought Kate was a brilliant preacher. And you'll really enjoy it. So do come back for the next sequel next Sunday morning, if at all you can and you're not on holiday. So how can we apply this story of Cain and Abel to our own lives? Because that's what it's about, isn't it? We read something in the Bible. How does it affect us? What we're going to do about it? What's our response? And probably by reading in Paul's letter to the Romans in chapter 12. I'll just read two verses there. It says, "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, of course, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." God wants the best for us, you know. He really does.